Hi everyone, welcome to PA Talks, a podcast series by Parametric Architecture, where we are joined by esteemed figures from the world of design and architecture to get into their personal stories, the obstacles they've overcome, their creative process, and their insights into the future. It's great to have you with us. Enjoy our engaging discussions, and to support our podcast, please find out more information in the links provided in the description below. Hey guys, welcome to PA Talks. In this episode, we have Aryan Hakimi in our office. He's one of the ex-lead designers at Zaha Hadid Architects and also founder of Aryan Hakimi Architects, a Tehran-based practice which is focused on rationalizing and liberating design solutions. Aryan is also a computational designer who has been involved in several high-profile projects at ZHA, like Metro Station in King Abdullah Financial District in Riyadh and Unicorn Island Master Plan Project in Chengdu. Aryan has also taught multiple workshops at the Academy and is one of the young talents leading creativity in design. Before we dive into the episode, let's highlight Pacademy, an architectural educational platform dedicated to parametric design and computational tools in architecture. In collaboration with top architects and designers, we have covered a vast array of topics in this domain. Join our live workshops and explore the cutting-edge intersection of design, technology, and architecture. And now let's get into the episode. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Aryan, for joining our office. It's really a pleasure to meet you in person, and so excited to see you at PA. We've done so much collaborations together, and I've known you from since 2016 or 17. I don't completely remember, but yeah, we have a long history of knowing each other, and this is the great moment that I have the pleasure of speaking with you. So thanks for joining our office.
Thank you, Hamid-chan, for inviting me and such warm welcome. And I'm glad to be here at your office in Istanbul on such a lovely day.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So I'd like to ask about how did you get into architecture? Was it kind of a childhood dream to become an architect, or was it something that you never planned for it? But yeah, you at the end of the day, you became a good architect.
Well, being a good architect, I think that's a question mark for the future. But I think when I was in high school, it was when I realized that I had some sort of a favor towards geometry, and so I had some sort of a passion towards that. And I remember I had a math teacher that he actually in the class mentioned that a couple of times that I could actually pursue architecture as my career. But I didn't take that seriously, and I wanted to become a doctor, but I was not successful in getting into the medical school. So my journey towards architecture started from India. So I traveled there. I studied my first 2 years in Pune, is a city south of Mumbai. And then I transferred my degree into Iran. So I finished my bachelor's at University of Tehran, Fine Arts Faculty. And then in 2010, I migrated to Europe. I got a dual master degree, one in urban design and one in short form, it was an introduction to biomimicry design towards geometry in IAC in Barcelona. And I was, right after I graduated, I was started teaching this design methodology that I learned, which actually is a kind of a backbone to our office design philosophy. I was doing these workshops, and in one of them in 2013, it was called the Dynamic Fields. We were tutoring it with Human Talebi, Farshad Mehdizadeh, and Mohsen Marizad.
Where was this?
In Bucharest, Romania, mm-hmm. in 2013, summer of 2013. And we had Patrick Schumacher as a keynote speaker. And that was when basically I managed to get a job at Zaha, and I joined the office in London, their office at London. And I was there for almost 8 years. And I basically, I wanted to basically open up my own firm and pursue what I always wanted to do, which we will speak later. But yes, that was a kind of a short version of it.
Yes, great. Okay. How working at Zaha changed or shaped your view for architecture?
So that's an interesting question. When I went to IAC, I got introduced to parametric design, which was like an eye-opening experience for me. However, it was a very short experience in that sense that we only had like nine academic months. But when I joined Zaha's office in London, I realized that not only they are the pioneers, that they are implementing this as a research-driven office, but they are also implementing it directly into practice. So basically, they were bridging these two gaps together, which was a very exclusive and intense experience. And I think I kind of got reborn into the field of architecture. So yeah, that was like a short version.
Yeah. You were involved in design process of some of ZHA's good projects. For example, I can name Kaft yeah. project, the King Abdullah Financial District metro station. Yes. Which part of the projects you were involved and how was the challenges that you faced in this project?
So to give you a short description, over the course of 8 years at Zaha's office, I got involved in more than 25 projects, which two of them got built. One of them is the KFD metro station in Riyadh. I was in the facade team. I was privileged to be part of that team because due to the nature of the geometry and the massing of that project, every surface was double curved and it was going into pinches. So mathematically, what we call them is, when you are giving them a thickness, you call them non-constant offset surfaces. And we had very good high-profile consultants such as Boro Happold and facade consultants New Technique with us to kind of break down this complexity and being able to somehow put forward and develop the design into the fabrication. And as I said, due to the nature of these surfaces and the complex geometry, everything had to be done parametrically. So from the surface subdivision, tessellations, and basically giving it the thickness, making sure that the facade buildup is all planar and the design system works in compliance with LEEDs and in compliance with the fabrication constraint. We had to have it under control through this platform such as Grasshopper. And one of the big challenges actually we had back then, because in 2013, if you remember in Rhino 5, we had T-spline as a separate plugin that you could be able to design and model this topological modeling for organic and freeform formats, which in Rhino 6 they kind of stopped because that company was purchased by Autodesk. So since we were doing all of those complex geometries inside Grasshopper and they had this type of surface treatment such as creases, and you had to manipulate them in a very delicate way that you use it in automotive industry, and that technology was not available there. And I remember that I even wrote a couple of letters to T-spline company asking them to give us some insights how we could bring this into Grasshopper, because we really need to use these things. And they said that, sorry guys, you're on your own. So yeah, we had to come up with some reverse engineering techniques. It was quite fun. There was a guy, his name was Gagan in Zaha. I don't remember his last name, but through him we managed to somehow find really interesting solutions to be able to basically make this happen, because there were around 5,000 unique pieces that each of them had to have that kind of a delicate surface treatment, that without those techniques it would have made it kind of impossible. Wow. So this was one of them in terms of the design. And in terms of Beam, because we had to deliver that project into Revit, right now there are numerous plugins that you could actually convert, like from Grasshopper, you could export and import as a live geometry with all the BIM parameters into Revit. But back then, it was not possible.
Yeah, now it's right on the side.
It's right now we have this technology, but back then we didn't. So with the help of, again, we set up a kind of a task force team, bringing some people. There was a guy in Australia that we bring him into office, and through this sort of an R&D research and testing, we managed to be able to basically to rationalize high profile and high detail design inside inside Grasshopper, and directly implement all the BIM parameters and basically convert it into Revit. So that was it. Like back then, it was a very revolutionary process.
And in what stage is now Kaft project? I think it's going to be completed very soon, right?
It has. I think they already they had the soft opening last year. It's almost finished, I think. But unfortunately, I haven't yet been able to visit the site. But it's almost there. I mean, I've seen the pictures. They have implemented such nice details into it.
The front facade is kind of, I think, the iconic, the most iconic point view of the entire project. Probably that was your creativity to bring.
Well, the creativity, I don't, to be honest, another thing in Zaha is that you cannot just try to kind of pinpoint who has done what. I think it's a teamwork, and it was a accumulation of all knowledges. I mean, it's a huge teamwork coming together. You couldn't say.
My point was about like the icon of that project has become its facade, because it's very uniquely designed with the pattern that, with the shapes and patterns, geometries. It's really great, and I wanted to congratulate on that, that you've been also involved in this project.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure and honor to be part of that amazing team.
Great. Can you talk about the Chengdu Unicorn Island project? I know you were involved also in that project. Can you talk a little bit about the details?
Yes. Well, in general, Chinese project in Zaha, they have their own, let's say, modus operandi, in a sense that we had to, due to the nature of the workflow, we had to be quite, let's say, swift, concise and suffice in the sense that, in short version, let's say we were modeling on Monday, and on Friday, when we were asking the contractor on site that, have you guys see our drawing, and on WeChat they were just taking a photo. They said that it's already erected, it's built
so already.
Not only that, we look at it, it's already there,
so fast.
You need to deal with it. And there is no point of change. So,
was it according to the design, or
most of the time, okay. Yes. But obviously, again, due to that nature, sometimes that it happens that due to the very fast track of the project, that yes, there might be some discrepancies. But overall, it was a super amazing experience. Even though, like, for that project, I was focused on one of the buildings, the startup building. Which, for the parts that I was involved, I tried to basically set up parametric system for most of the parts, or basically for all the packages that I worked on, from the facade, the shell, from tessellations to rationalizations, and from patterns, perforations, either from acoustic or acoustic panels, or for the MEP, for the ventilation purpose, patterns in all sorts, and rationalization of all the packages. I tried to implement parametric design because that was the only way to be able to basically develop such high detail design that is going to be ready for fabrication, and also be able to implement all the necessary changes, either if it's coming from the construction perspective, or from the design perspective, or even both, So that was the only way. So in that sense, it was a very interesting project.
Chengdu's Unicore project is, I think, a unique project of Zaha as well, because those triangular glass shapes and the structure that comes falls like a rainfall down to into the middle of the atrium, like a space. I think it's one of the unique projects of Zaha as well. I've seen you have published also some of the construction phases of the Unicore.
Yeah, it was quite fast. Yeah, I think it got built in less than 2 years. It was really unique, and it was setting a record in the office. This is what I heard.
It is, I'm sure. As someone who has worked on various scales of architecture, from master plan designing and to fashion design, product design, what have you found to be the most challenging and also the rewarding on working on different scales?
Well, the challenging part is that, well, of course, when you are multidisciplinary kind of a visionary, multidisciplinary kind of a person, at the same time, you have to be able to be a fast learner and being able to see the criteria and the boundaries and the constraints, understanding what are the scope of the project, to see the big picture. And you have to read a lot, basically. Mm-hmm. I remember for one of my workshops back in 2010, Rethinking Modularities, we had this team of students that developed a very cool seating system. Even though I had a good background in design and having working at Zaha, I had enough experience. But when I myself wanted to enter that realm, I had to learn. I had to read a couple of books, and we had to do lots of R&D and making sure that in every aspect, from ergonomy to anthropometry and from the fabrication point of view, comfortability, materiality, and ease of, again, how will it feel? I had to read a lot. Mm-hmm. So this, I would call it as a challenge, in the sense that we have to go really deep. You cannot just say that, okay, just because I have been part of, for example, if I've just done one facade for one building, that already qualifies me as a furniture designer. Mm-hmm. That is a totally different realm. So I have to study that. And right now, for example, I'm going to collaborate with a fashion brand in Turkey. And in 3 months, we have to develop some hot couture and, you know, and at the same time, ready to wear collection. So I know I have a lot of homework to do.
I'm sure. How do your experiences in different design domains inform and inspire one another? Or let's say, are there any specific principles and concepts that you constantly apply across the different scales, from architecture, fashion, to product?
Yes. In terms of principle, everything started back in 2012. When I was in IAC doing my second master, we got introduced to this kind of a design methodology, which we call it bottom-up. Let's say that in a very ordained design system, most of them are top-down. For example, you have an architectural firm, a client comes to you and tells you that, okay, I want you to design me a villa or a house. So you already know the project brief, and you already know what you're going to give to your client. So back then, through that design methodology, which was called bottom up, is that you don't know what you're going to give, what's going to happen. You don't define a project, but we break it down, the design elements, and through the geometry, which we called it back then, the design component, by focusing on all its geometrical aspect and geometrical features, by going deep into that, and then expanding your knowledge in terms of configuration, depending how it would basically be populated towards the system. And then through each of these segments, then you will see that how that system is gonna give you a visual cue, what's it going to be. So as a principal, in order to be able to jump in between of these disciplines, as a key component here, we use geometry and patterns. So because they are already ubiquitous, they are everywhere. Yes. It's just that, for example, you see a pattern of a galaxy, it looks like the Nebula galaxy, you will see it, like the formation of it, it used the same geometrical principle and patterns like Fibonacci as the same pattern of an aerial satellite view of a tornado, or the same pattern like in a sunflower. So these are the geometrical, I think, principles that it kind of enables us to be able to jump in between. However, this is not, let's say that again, this is the key component, but the another component is that to know when you are entering each and every discipline, what would be the rules? Because the rules that are applied in each of these things, in each of these disciplines, they have their own performances. Like the Fibonacci sequence in sunflower is for the fact that you could have more number of seeds in that area. But again, that sequential pattern in a different discipline or in different part of nature may not have the same performance. So this is the second key part that basically enables you to do that.
So you're referencing kind of nature and decoding it into the language of mathematics and patterns and apply it into different scales of design, yes, like architecture, fashion, product, and smaller scales maybe.
Yes. We use nature as a key component, as a biomimicry, getting inspiration, seeing nature as the ultimate source of inspiration, combining it with the discipline and its regulations and constraints, applying it there, kind of enables us to be able to enter different realms.
Yes. You established your own company. Why did you establish your own company, and what were you looking forward to do that you couldn't continue doing in Zaha?
Well, that's a really tough question.
But a helpful one. Helpful for the audience.
The thing is that when you are working in a big company, it would be very difficult to be, let's say that what I had in mind, let's say what I'm actually doing is quite radical in the sense that, let's say that in 3 months, our firm, we are going to submit, we are going to hopefully we'll be able to put our this clutch bag that we had designed back in 2016 finally is coming to the market, and at the same time we have to deliver a master plan almost 1 million meter square GFA project. So being able to do and very to be fluid and in a source, I mean, to have total freedom of making big decisions, I think this could be one of those, which I think once you're in an office that is already, first of all, they are already pioneers, that they are working there and they have their own establishment with all the hierarchy that they have to basically move forward. But in a sense, I wanted to have, again, that I think it was the sense of freedom. To be able to make mistakes and to fail, perhaps this is something that maybe I was not being able to do it while I was there. But here is, I think, yeah, that would be it.
Cool. And you established Aryan Hakimi Architects and Aryan Hakimi Design.
Yes.
Two separate, not companies, let's say, two separate design disciplines that you could also focus in architectural scale and also in smaller scale and interior or maybe product design.
Yeah, I wanted to distinguish them and separate them because those are going to have two different, realms, and they have their own separate worlds. They are going to be connected somehow through those design philosophies. But at the same time, since the scale is quite different, at some point, we might use pattern as an art in a very artistic way, but less performative. But at the same time, when you're in architecture, everything has to, like the concept and the output, they should perform. There is this element of functionality. So I wanted to make sure that these two are, they have their own entities and they are not going to be, in a sense, mixed or merged.
Right. Being an Iranian and inspiring from Iranian architecture, let's say, how does this feeds into your architecture? Are you inspired? Are you getting inspired by the, let's say, old Iranian, traditional Iranian architecture, the culture that Iranian people have, or how does this feed to your architecture?
100%, even more, because Iranian background, Iranian civilization, or if we call it Persian civilization or a Persian art, not only it is kind of a multi transdisciplinary in a sense. For example, from our calligraphy, from the Persian calligraphy that has all these rules, the different strokes, how you are able to basically create those shapes in a very artistic way, and at the same time, not only that to use it as a written language, but at the same time using it as a decorative element that you will have it all around, like in domes, in mosques, or in spiritual places. And at the same time, we have Persian carpet that it works with patterns, it has systems, or with bricks. I had this book at home, is about the legacy of brick, bricks in architecture, in Iranian architecture. I think I read that book at least 10 times. I've posted it many pages. I think the fact that with one simple element, through this very specific, in a very smart configuration of these pieces coming together, and you have endless number of possibilities that you have, that one element, it's awe-inspiring. Yes, I use that a lot. And even in our first design proposal for this mixed-use building, for our first architectural project, we used Iranian calligraphy as a design component. We tried to translate it as a facade language.
Right. And what do you think about the younger generation of architects that are now doing extraordinary works, inspiring from the Iranian culture, Iranian architecture, and they are changing the entire face of or understanding of Iranian architecture in the whole world. What do you think about the younger generation of architects emerging with the industry?
I think that Iranian people, Iranian designer generation, they have really good raw talents. My advice to them is that explore, see, let your eyes see all this beauty. We have so many museums, we have really good art galleries. We have to basically get to know our history. We need to know that what we have been doing. I'm not saying that we have to use it as a, we just have to use it as a, let's say that just to copycatting these things. But at the same time, you need your eyes to see and understand. Every time that, for example, I myself, every time I go around, I try to take pictures, I basically try to do some sketch on them, and I try to use that smartness. I try to find the reason and logic and try to implement it somehow into contemporary architecture. Mm-hmm. So I think that we have to be very vigilante in that sense to kind of know, understand what we have, and to use it to bring it back into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've seen you have done so many great photographies as well. I think you have a great passion for it. You're a good photographer, actually.
No, I'm not. No, but, this is a personal experience. I can be honest about it. On my first week that I joined Zaha, we had this. I was privileged to participate in one of the design reviews with Patrick. So we were in this room of 30, 40 people that they were showing their work to Patrick. There were this group of four, depending on the team size. I don't remember how many, but roughly, let's say that we were like 30, 40 people. And when the kind of literature that they were using to describe the forms and the references, the artist references that they were mentioning, I noticed that I don't understand a single word. Are these guys speaking English? Why am I not understanding? When they are talking about such artist that has done that, why, what is the missing element? And I realized that, well, I have been focused mostly on the technicality. Let's say that I have been, like, through my master's, I focused a lot on the, let's say that, sharpening my skills in the digital tools, but I totally forgot about, like, reading and going, like, knowing a couple of artists that they are actually implementing these techniques. So that was when I realized that, okay, it is time, I have to go out, I have to, so I make it into my personal agenda and mission. On a weekly basis, I try to go to each and every museum and art gallery, and basically, and not just by visiting, basically each and every gallery that I visited, I first went there and I asked for the press release, and I started reading all about who is this artist, what's their background, what he has done, and what is his intention and design philosophy. And then I was trying to kind of compare it to the what he was actually he or she was showing, and then basically comparing to the design statement of the artist. So that experience kind of helped me to have a better understanding and a wider understanding of digital liberal wider liberal arts, from media art, sculpture, mm-hmm. graphics, name a graphic design, and all of these different branches in art, and it kind of helped me a lot.
Yeah, I remember you sent me the open house 2019 London. A collection of stunning photos that you have been taking, and you've been going through all the entire district, taking photos, these amazing architecture offices and also the museums. It was just extraordinary.
Yeah, like, and I think London is one of the best places, I think, in the world, that the art node in that city.
Yeah,
the amount of art events, I think it's like no other place.
Right, that's true. So talking about digital tools, what has been changed since you got into digital? Like, what were you looking before that you couldn't found? You couldn't find, and you found while you started coding, you started using Grasshopper. What was that specific thing that changed the way that you did design, do architecture?
The thing is that, again, back in 2010, when I started my master, I was really into hand sketches and, you know, very low tech in a sense, design methodologies that I was trying to implement. But then suddenly there was this platform. We had a workshop, 1 week workshop with Luis Fragbada. He was our teacher. It was our tutor in IAC. And then I remember he I'm trying to basically use my own understanding back then. There was this kind of these battery shaped components, and through these wires connecting them together, and bam, there is this very cool deformed hexagonal grid. And then there is this thing called attractor, and then these shapes, you know, respond to it in a very interesting way. And I was like, wow, this is something that I want. I mean, how can I be able to kind of control this thing? And then basically this is how it all started, and I started to read again. I read and watched so many YouTube tutorials. It was very difficult back then, but I think through lots of practices, I kind of get the hang of it. But then again, I was only focusing on the basically how to understand the tool itself. It was the Zaha experience that kind of disciplined me, in a sense that, well, all those shapes, depending on where you are using them. Is it a facade? Is it a pattern as a decorative element? Or you're using it like a digital print on glazings? Mm-hmm. Depending on where you are using it, it has some performances, and you need to be able to control it depending on that discipline and on that part of the building. So that was again another experience to be able to kind of harness that wildness that you do in the academia. Here you had to basically not only you had to keep the design intent as intact, but at the same time you have to add the variant of functionality and performance.
Right.
So this is what I found, that that was two different experiences coming into one.
Right. So what is your day-to-day software that you use as a sketchpad?
I think
probably Grasshopper. Are you a Grasshopper guy?
Well, in Zaha, yes, they called me. I was a Grasshopper guy in Zaha because that was my on a daily basis. I was using that. But to be honest, I think at some point, I think it was the, if I say software, I say my eyes. I try to extract knowledge or to understand the complexity of shapes around me by just looking at them. Like if I'm walking on the street and if I see a really good car, I would basically stop and for like 10, 20 seconds, I try to understand the proportions between the elements, the proportion or the ratio between the length and the height and with the width, or how does the front light, what are those tiny little like some patterns on the light in a car, say okay, how does it work? Sometimes I even take pictures and I basically look at it and I try to see that okay, what are the potentials, where else I can use this thing, and then basically, and that's how basically our office operates.
Incredible. Do you do also hand sketching?
My hand sketching is awful, but I try to develop systems in a sense through a very, very bad hand sketches. I try to set up some rules and guidelines, and then through that, I try to basically make the digital model. In a sense that I am very bad with hand drawings, but the models that I work with are like very, very, very with high precision.
Yeah.
So I am digitally very discreet, but physically I'm very haphazard. Yeah. Frank Gehry style.
This is a good example of an architect who, is not good in sketching. And not all bad sketchers are, let's say, bad architects. This is a good example for that. So have you used any of the AI tools recently or emerging, Midjourney, DALL-E, or anything, ChatGPT?
I've used Google Bard and ChatSonic a couple of times. It was a very, very interesting experience. The fact that you are able to get a very unique set of responses from a very basic words, I found is quite fascinating. Very indirectly, I work with Midjourney. We actually give one of our previous designed towers, one of our workshops, I give it to DALL-E, to Midjourney, and then ask to change the pattern from triangle into hexagon. And I saw very, very interesting and I don't want to say frightening because I wasn't frightened, but let's say that I was excited. It was a feel of excitement that wow, so yet another amazing possibilities that there is a question mark that where can it go. So but for our upcoming project, I really want to basically put my hands on it.
How do you think these tools can shape the future of design in different and multiple disciplines?
I remember that the other day we had a discussion about it.
This you asked about my idea, but I couldn't hear about your idea.
As a tool, like all the other tools, like if we consider Grasshopper as a tool to be able to express, like if you understand those set of rules, you are able to generate really cool design. I see it as an opportunity. So I'm sure that in general, I see digital tools as a reflection of our mind. So depending how smart you are to interact with computers, the outcome could be also smart. Like, for example, I'm sure that many firms in the world, they are using the same softwares, like the same softwares that Zaha Hadid Office, exactly, or Norman Foster, they use. But only they can basically get out, like only they can be able to basically design to have such very prolific repertoires, because they have a very unique design system. They have a very unique design philosophy that they have. They have a great team that they are able to do it. So it's not just the software. So even though I'm very new into this, but I see it as a really cool tool, in a sense that, again, as we were talking, maybe architects, we have to be able to communicate more directly. So there might be a new skill set that we need to basically sharpen, mm-hmm, our skill set on that, which could be language, because through those words, right, you're generating. So, and then having a good knowledge about geometries and how the facade, but how the building would work, I think you could could use it as a very unique asset to expand your creativity and to express your ideas. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. That's great. No, that's totally, I totally agree with you. And this is, as long as we are agreeing on that, everybody is agreeing on that, that this is a tool, not just something that could replace you, I don't think we will have any problem. But yeah, most people are somehow afraid of getting their jobs or something like this. But it's not like that. As you mentioned, this is a tool everyone can use, Grasshopper, to create different ideas, different design styles regarding their own principles and their own methodologies and understanding of the rules and situations. And this could be also considered as a very good tool. I'm now in contact in close discussions or talkings or through our workshops that we do, in close conversations with very pioneering talents like yourself. And the design that they're all applying is very different than like everybody else or from anyone else, let's say. And basically, as also Arturo Tedeschi mentioned, is that this tool is just reducing the or removing the boundary or removing the barrier that is in front of designers to create good designs. And now we are just shortening the distance from our minds to create geometries or let's say artworks or images. And this could be a great opportunity for everyone to explore different ideas, create creative works. And basically, this is the power of the tool that is giving to us. So yeah, I totally agree with you.
Only in my first year back in 2000, because I started architecture in 2002, only in my first year I remember that we were using these set squares and pen and rulers, and we had this big kind of adjustable desk that you have to work on. Like, we don't use that anymore.
Yeah.
Now we are working with mouse, and through, again, this graphical coding through Grasshopper, that we are able to generate those shapes. Obviously, at some point, I think we have been using mouse for over 30, 40 years now. So I think this could be a new tool. Now you can talk and it will give you something. So it shouldn't be that scary, in a sense. Like,
exactly. So what do you think about our platform, PA? And you're also running a studio workshop in our academy called Hyper Patterns. What do you think about our platform?
I think I told you before, but I was following Parametric Architecture Instagram when you were around 500 followers.
I'm so honored to have you.
So basically, the fact that you guys are over a million, let's say, followers, it actually says for itself. In general, I think it's one of the very successful educational platform that you have. Basically, not only you are pioneering in terms of providing these educational courses to people that they want to learn, but at the same time to kind of connect them with the, you know, high end, very, you know, let's say technology based, technology driven companies such as Zaha or Foster, that they are able to kind of connect with them and they are able to talk about their experiences and somehow replicate those experiences for the people that they want to learn. So because back then we didn't have that opportunity. We had to basically just go through some books or even through these websites, you could only see like seven renders or seven images with 700 words, and that would be it. But now through these platforms, they are able to kind of interact and they can learn a lot. They can know what's going on in each of those offices in a sense and replicate that experience. I think this is quite unique.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much on that note. Do you read any books? Are there any recommendations? I remember you recommended a very good book to me, Life 3.0 at CD Next. It's one of the CD Next that we invited you. Mm-hmm. Can you recommend a couple of books to
for the audience? I just recently finished, about a couple of months ago, I finished that Homo Sapien book by Yuval Harari. That was a very interesting book.
Now, I remember, I think I read that book four times. It's very inspiring.
This is very inspiring book. Then, these days I'm reading two books. One of them is about Nike.
The brand Nike.
No, the shoe. It's about their shoe. I found it very interesting and inspiring. And the fact that, you know, Nike is not about just, they are not about shoes. They are way more than that. And this is very good. Another one that I'm reading right now is Visual Guides to Architectural Styles. I found it very, very interesting. And the knowledge, again, the fact that, you know, you go through all of these architectural styles through this period and you see that how they are evolved together and at some point they are connected. I found that one is very interesting. And also there is this, well, that one is not a book, but it's a very short episode of this sort of documentary and one-on-one talk. It's called Masterclass.
Yeah.
So I just finished with Frank Gehry. That was quite interesting. So in less than 10 minutes,
I watched that as well.
On that note, I want to also mention that there is this guy, Charlie Rose. Unfortunately, for some reason, in 2017, the show stopped. But I think if you go to the website, you would be able to find very, very inspiring and learn and very, in a sense that, let's say that have a basic understanding of what started, how, and what started back then. You could find it there. So about media, about art, about business, about, you can pick the topic. And Charlie Rose has spoken and interviewed, let's say that, all the pioneers and the leaders on that field. So for example, talking about in our own world, like SubD and all this polygonal modeling, it kind of blew my mind that I came to know that it was Steve Jobs behind it. So Steve Jobs through Pixar,
SubD?
They brought, yes.
Really?
This So through that, through the Pixar, they kind of developed this digital company, and through Dr. Clark, that kind of developed the algorithm that through this, you could kind of have, having a maximum control over this low poly control points that you would be able to manipulate those. And through Toy Story, the kind of a technology developed that we all now use it. So, yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know about that. Definitely SubD is a very great tool. And now in Rhino 7, it's...
The algorithm and the knowledge that exists now, they were kind of the foundation came from there.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. What have been the most important lesson that you have learned during your journey and would like to share with aspiring architects and future architects, let's say, and designers?
Don't give up, be persistent and have patience. Rome was not built in one day. You have to be patient and, you know, don't give up, move forward. Or, you know, in better words, stay hungry and stay foolish.
Yes, great. That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, Arian. This was a really great discussion to your ideas, and I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Awesome. Great.